each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us, to some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyce here with you again on a wonderful Wednesday. I guess it's wonderful. It's...
This guy's getting here.
Look at that, isn't that great? It's wonderful in the sense that every day is God's wonderful gift to us, right?
Good. That's good way of thinking of it.
You got to think about that, although it's crazy because so much crazy things happening, and it hurts sometimes to think about.
Let Snoopy get in here.
That was my brain. Nick, you found a good, you were able to tap into my brain right there. Well, God bless you, everyone, for listening, and I hope to wrinkle your brain a little bit as we talk about our faith and the world around us. I flock noted out this morning about heaven, assimilation, and relativism.
Wow.
Can you swallow
words.
That?
That's a lot.
So I'm going to tie that all together here and everything. And that is so deep, Tony, that I decided I got to start with a joke.
It's always a little dangerous. Let's try it.
It's a good way. Yeah, it's a good. And I have to thank one of my faithful email friends. You know, how you got some people that send you lots of email, and you don't open most of them. Some people send you so many emails you can't get to them.
Exactly,
can't get to them. But I like when they send them to me because when I get a chance to open things, I often find little special things. So this is a thank you out to Bernie, if you're listening. Bernie, God bless you, and thanks for being one of my email providers, something good. Like that. But this is especially a good, it's not a joke, it's a riddle, shall we say. It's a riddle, and it's especially a riddle for senior citizens, okay? So you who are younger folks, you could play along too, but... see if you can get this riddle, okay? Here's the situation. You're on a horse, galloping at a constant speed. On your right side is a sharp drop-off. On your left side is an elephant traveling at the same speed as you. Directly in front of you is a galloping kangaroo, and your horse is unable to overtake it. Behind you is a lion running at the same speed as you and the kangaroo. What must you do to get out of this highly dangerous situation? Think logically before you track down for your answer. Any possible clues there, Tony?
I'm going to say jump on the elephant.
Jump on the... That was the elephant in the room.
Exactly.
He sometimes shows up. I didn't know he showed up.
There he is. Mention his name, and there he is.
There he is. So here's this danger. Yeah, okay, back.
He wants to know the answer.
Back out into the sacristy there. That's right. The answer to this riddle is, quickly and quietly get off the merry-go-round, then go home and take a nap.
Nice. That's why the elephant was so bad.
I thought that was pretty good. Oh, my goodness.
These guys are laughing.
Yeah, it's good that they pay attention. It's good that they pay attention. So anyways, that was a special little levity. you got to have a little levity with your profundity. You got to keep yourself smiling while you think of the tragedies and the difficulties.
I'm going to probably get this joke later on. I'm going to smile.
That's right. Well, the key was in the going at its constant
right.
speed.
Yeah.
You know.
I feel bad that I didn't even get that.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is. Wait a minute. Oh, okay. Yeah, the king, you're on a merry-go-round.
Right.
They're all going around. And the steep drop-off, you think yourself at a mountain cliff, but you're just on a merry-go-round. Mm-hmm. Okay. Enough said. Let's get serious. Gosh, what is dominating in our news today is the again more Islamic jihadists, radical Islamic jihadism. The attacks in France last Friday, and I just heard today on the radio that there were more terrorist attacks, more Christians killed by Boko Haram in Nigeria. 32 were killed in a marketplace and 80 maimed and wounded. You know, that's 120, that's 113 people, 112 people, 32. And the ones killed in Paris, they say 129 or whatever, almost the same, but it's probably not going to be, front news.
No, no, it won't be.
No, it's just there's a sadness, there's a there's a worry, and we know as believers that God will protect us. God is on our side, but there has to be something more has to be done. You know, it is a time of taking action, and what that is very difficult to really express, but I pray that we have some good, strong leaders who will guide us in that way. I want to get to that, and I have some, insights into how we can or should address that problem of the day. But in the past couple of weeks, we were talking about that movie, Five People You Meet in Heaven, right, Tony?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if many of our listeners got a chance to watch it or look at it yet, but hope you can. I just want to wrap up a couple of things because it emphasizes, and maybe it could segue into the issue of, shall we say, Islamic terrorism and the values and principles of our country, of Christianity in general, the Judeo-Christian heritage that often for the past 1,500 years has been in opposition to Islam, et cetera. Difficult things to navigate through. But in thinking about heaven, it does give you a sense. Why is thinking about heaven just to comfort us as we think about dying? You know, that's one obvious reason that we want to know what heaven is like, right? I'm with you. We all think about that. We want to know what heaven is like, because we want to know what's coming when the Lord closes our eyes in this world and takes us away from here. But there's another aspect of why it's important to study and try to understand what is heaven like, because what heaven is like does have an effect on how we want to live our lives. If you don't see a connection between the two, you're missing a very crucial point, especially about Christianity, Catholicism especially, but I think all religions. And that's why the frustration, the tie-in with the radical jihadism is that what is mostly purported, what is most famous, can't be the whole of it, but what is mostly talked about when you hear about the Islamic version of heaven is you hear about the 72 versions, right? Isn't that that's what comes to mind? I would like to propose to any Muslims who may be listening to try to teach the world something else, explain to us a little bit more differently what the vision of heaven is like. Because what that 72 versions is dominates the psyche or the vision, the picture that we have in our minds. And of course, that's quite a hedonistic, that's quite a materialistic, it's quite a pleasure-seeking vision.
And there's got to be more than that.
In Christianity, it's hard to pin down, but you know that there is, mm-hmm. especially because Jesus himself said in heaven, you neither marry nor are given in a marriage. And so there's something, but marriage is an image. It's a reflect. I almost so often at wedding times, I like to tell people how beautiful and wonderful married life is. And yet it's the beginning. Take the most wonderful marriage you can think of, the most wonderful romantic time with your loved one, and multiply that a million. You know, and then you're beginning to understand a little bit what heaven would be like. And so, but in that movie, the five people you'll meet in heaven, it's all about trying to purify this guy, which is very Catholic in the sense that there's a period of purification. The way the purification goes is that our hero in the movie, again, John Voight, who stars as Eddie, a guy who's the repairman at the carnival and who's an old World War II vet, he's got to go back to his life and meet people that happened in his life, and he's supposed to learn lessons. What could he have done differently? How did maybe what he did and what he said affect him in such a way, in a negative way? And so that has to be purified to learn a lesson. I didn't like one of the things. I might have mentioned this before when we talked about the movie, but I didn't like when the first guy he meets, Jeff Daniels, the character of Jeff Daniels, my hero from the movie Gettysburg, who played Colonel Chamberlain. I didn't even recognize it was Jeff Daniels, actually. He's all painted blue and he doesn't look like himself. But anyways, when Eddie, the character, says, oh, yeah. Well, he says, well, where am I? He goes, where do you think? and he goes, yes, you died. He doesn't say, what's good about the movie, he doesn't say, you're in heaven, because he doesn't say, you're in purgatory. That might be too much of a giveaway for a Hollywood movie. But in essence, he doesn't say, you're in heaven, but he does say, you died. So you're someplace between death and heaven, which is what we consider purgatory. And he says, oh, and then so I have to pay for my sins. And he says, no, you're just here to learn. And I think that's a little problematic in terms of our Catholic theology, because there is a sense of punishment for our sins in purgatory. And if all we do is learn, maybe unlearn what we thought wrong, or learn what we never learned, that makes sin equal to ignorance. And as if you remember me saying, the heresy called Pelagianism is hiding in the shadows. If you think, or I'm sorry, I said Pelagian, I meant to say Gnosticism. The heresy of Gnosticism is hiding in the shadows of a response like that, because Gnosticism says the human race, is lost in darkness. Jesus came to give us truth and wisdom. Those who move from ignorance to knowledge, salvation is really a movement from ignorance to knowledge. And it lends itself to belittling people who aren't as smart as you, let us say, you know. And you can become very smart and yet not get any closer to the true God. I always like to say sometimes the truths that a second grader says after he receives his first Holy Communion are sometimes truer and wiser than the stuff that you might get in a college class in sociology or psychology or something, one of the social sciences usually. So anyways, try not to slip into the heresy of Gnosticism by only thinking that what is wrong with us is our ignorance. Sometimes we know. Sometimes we know and we still do wrong. Sin is not exactly equal to ignorance. Ignorance can lead to sin, very, very obviously, but not always, shall we say. And sometimes there is sometimes even a sense of ignorance gives us, we're saved by our ignorance in some ways. Like we didn't know who you were. If you're in the dark, like Jesus says in one of his parables, the one who knew better is going to be punished more severely than the one who didn't know. So that's a key point. But one of the neat parts of the movie is when Eddie meets his wife. His wife died before he did, of course, and he spends most of his life as a bachelor. And so he meets her, and she gets to declare what her heaven is like. So she bops around the world and time and cultures at weddings because she just thinks weddings are such a wonderful thing. Not a bad choice, you know, you could say that. And so he meets her, and he's, of course, overcome with joy to see his wife again. And he says at one point, does God know I'm here? And she says, of course. And I'm glad that came out, because for most of the movie, my theological brain was saying, okay, if you're in heaven, the definition of heaven is meeting God. To know God is to know heaven. And so one of my pet peeves, one of my pet frustrations, one of my pet gripes is that we go about our life constructing a vision of what heaven is like absent of the vision of God. We want heaven to, and the image of the 72 virgins is a perfect example. Where is God? A much different understand when you think about life after death. What we all should be yearning for, my friends, is to meet God, to come into God's presence. And we always say, well, we'll get to see our loved ones. And of course, I think God would want us to, and we believe that we will, especially husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, dear friends, will be with each other. But if you forget that the bottom line or at the front door, God is everything in heaven. And so we don't lose our individuality in heaven, but you could maybe say our individuality becomes more beautiful because we see that we are part of God. And without meeting God, you won't really be in heaven. And that's one of the things I say. Be careful when you watch this movie. Don't take it too theologically correct and accurate, because there's no meeting of God except in this one little line when he says, does God know I'm here? Of course he does. And then all she says is, why do you ask? And he says, well, I guess I spent a lot of time on earth hiding from him. That's a great line. That's a great line. He says, the rest of the time, I figured he just didn't know I existed. You know, and that's the attitude of a lot of us. As we believe in God, but he's not that important. We don't think he's looking at. There's a line from G.K. Chesterton that says, if you took a person who spends his life running away from God and hating religion, take that person and place him in the presence of God in the life to come, he will spend eternity trying to run away from that which he has always run away from. And yet the difference between here and there is that there will be no place to hide. And so in heaven, even take an atheist, take a person who hates God and put him in heaven, and the very being in heaven will be hell for him. Isn't that powerful?
It is.
That's Chesterton as well. That's great. Well, before we get back to some other things, let's take a quick break. Father Tom Coy is here with you. Glad to be with you. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.com. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.com. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's. One church, many cultures. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Do you have loved ones who are away from the church? Do you feel helpless, anxious, or concerned because people you love no longer consider themselves Catholic? My name is Sister Teresa Alethea Noble. I am a religious sister with the Daughters of St. Paul, but I am also a former atheist. I was raised Catholic but rejected my faith for over 10 years. Evangelizing our friends and family is the most difficult kind of evangelization, but it is possible. I have written a book called The Prodigal You Love, Inviting Loved Ones Back to the Church, to help you invite your loved ones back to the church. You can find more information about this book at pauline.org/prodigalyoulove. Together, let's start an evangelization revolution.
Amen. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Father Tom Coy sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. That means it's Wednesday, I guess. That's how I tell my weeks, you know, where I get lost with the days sometimes. Just to wrap up, please try to watch that movie, Five People You Meet in Heaven. It's delightful, and it has a very Catholic twist because it kind of epitomizes what purgatory is, but not the fullness of the Bible. Of course, is the fullness of the revelation of God, the Bible plus the whole teachings of the Church throughout 2,000 years. I've got to include that. When I hear a lot of people saying, you know, get back to the Bible, you know, which is you have to, but the Bible is one of the fonts of revelation. The people of the church, the holy people of the church, is another font of revelation. Getting to the headache of the day, the terrible news of the more terrorist attacks. Let's see. I don't know if I should start with Nick. Do you have that news? Maybe we'll start with this from. There's been a lot of commentary, of course, on the Paris attacks, but this is one from a Navy intelligence officer. I don't know if he's ex or he still is, by the name of Mark Fallon. He was on the Fox News interview. So this will just put it in perspective, and I want to share with you couple of bulletin articles that I want to share. Let's listen to Mark Fallon.
Fully dispersed. This is an ideology that we're pursuing here. We have to stop looking at it through a Western lens. It's an organized effort with a central command. It's very decentralized, just as Al-Qaeda was, but even more so. They don't look for a Shura Council to approve their attacks, as Al-Qaeda did. They are indiscriminately and barbarically attacking as a deranged cult, which is what they are.
We hear from so many who mean so well, say we have to kill our way out of this. Could you help us understand why that's not possible?
Yeah, the application of kinetic energy may be useful in the battlefield, but it is not good when you're fighting an ideology. We need to stop looking at only the symptoms and take a better look at the cause. Now there's no doubt that that there is a military part of this war that we're engaged in here, but we also have to recognize that we can't kill our way out of this. We tried that and failed with Al-Qaeda after 2001. We used the application of force as the primary means. And I'm saying we don't need that, but we need strategies, not just tactics, that eliminate the terrorist financing, that eliminate the sources of recruits that want to kill us. So we need a more comprehensive strategy that use all instruments of national power.
To people who...
Yeah, that gives you a sense. I thought that was just a good little clip to bring in because it just puts the issue before us, you know. We're fighting an ideology. I think that's a key factor. It's not really just fighting another country because obviously ideologies can be multinational. So that's a good point he's making. His point about not killing our way out of that is obviously a good reminder that if we do kill so many, I hate to say it, even as a priest, some destroying needs to be done because it doesn't. You always hope for conversion. You always hope for change of heart, but there is a time when the words don't work, as it were, that it's proven that words aren't working. If they were to work, it would be the first time in 1,500 years that they would. And it takes a little bit of humility to say that now we have the right words that will convert. I don't know. It'd be nice if we did, but we'll still look for them. But I find myself caught. I find myself very caught because I don't want to be a hawk, but it seems like there needs to be time for hawkishness, shall we say. I don't know. Tony, do you have any comments and what have you?
You know, I find myself in the same position you are. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're right. Words aren't going to, you're not going to change anybody with these words. It's just these people have a plan. And it's something you have to defend against.
Yeah.
And I don't think people are thinking about it that way.
Yeah. This week, U.S. bishops are in Washington, D.C. in one of their annual meetings. And I just saw a statement. They came out and they were saying, we can't stop migration. We can't stop the ones fleeing, especially from Syria. From coming here, we have to welcome the stranger. And respectfully, I just have to say that it seems like they're lacking prudence at this time.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously generosity and hospitality are values, are virtues of Christianity, of the United States. There's also the virtue of prudence and watchfulness, and there's a vice of being fool-hearted, or a vice that's sometimes thought of as naivete. The answer that just short a short answer or something as I've been thinking about this, of course, this week. Remember Juliana Tamarazzi, the woman mm-hmm. we've had on this radio show a few times, how she's been working, and the Christians in the Middle East have been begging for a province.
was just
give us a province that we could have as our own. Let us live. Let us set up, you know, even give us a, you know, a bad area of land, or, you know, at least with some water, with some resources. Boy, and if we did set up a nice province for the Christians, I bet we could raise $1 gazillion to build a canal 10 times long as the Suez Canal to wherever they are, to get water to them and to build a beautiful little city, a town, a province. Why that could be done too in the Middle East for the Muslim people who are trying to flee. Let them set up a province, a safe zone, as it were. That to me seems much more prudent than indiscriminately having all the immigrants come. And they say we're going to vet them. We have a strong system of vetting. And that just seems so naive as well, you know, because I thought of this analogy too. Those of you who are listening that are part of any Catholic diocese here in the United States in the modern times know about something called virtus. There's just the little Latin word virtue that symbolizes all the things that go around the sex abuse what is it called? What would you call the virtus? It's the way. It's the program to vet us who work in the church and volunteer in the church. We're looking. We have this elaborate system of checking us. You know, and that's why most of us who work in the church, we find it kind of annoying and it's a pain in the neck. But we all kind of realize, it's unfortunately, but we got to do it. And so we're fingerprinted at times. A lot of the teachers have to be fingerprinted. Not everyone's fingerprinted, but we're constantly being, so to speak, educated. That we're tracked, you know, and you move here and there, et cetera. That's an elaborate system, and it's only for a small group of people. And to say that we can vet 500,000 of these people that come from the Middle East is foolhardy. They don't have databases. We don't know how to check if their name is their name that they give you.
See, the funny thing is what they want you to think, okay, that you don't want to let these people in. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Nobody's thinking further than exactly what you're saying. How do you know who's coming in?
Yeah. And just like us, we accept the virtus thing. Because, it's not for me. You know, mm-hmm. I'm safe. I'm not a child molester. But that 1 in 1,000 we got to catch. And so we all agree, okay, we just go right along with it. Thank you, USCCB, mm-hmm. You know. But with this, there's no comparable thinking, you know. It seems like, and as bad as sex abuse is, you know, lopping off heads or setting off dirty atom bombs, you know, would be I would say that even trumps a sex abuse crime.
I think I was reading too, or I heard that this guy that planned this Paris thing.
Yeah,
he went from country to country, and nobody knew who he was. So he got in and out.
He probably had more than one name.
Exactly.
Then
you want to let a bunch of people in, and I know everywhere is bad.
It's not prudent.
Right.
It's
not.
I have to call the bishops out on this. They're not being prudent because there's a certain sense that we got to make up for past mistakes or so. We haven't been charitable enough in the past. We got to make it look like we're very charitable today, et cetera. The fullness of the Catholic faith has not been, let's be bold or blunt, has not been expressed or taught as best as we can. And now we may be making up grounds. I'll say this. If the bishops are saying it, or we as the United States are saying it, as Europe is saying it, and remember biblical history, my friends. God often used the enemies of Israel to punish Israel.
This is true.
And if we're going to say, let's not vet, let's not challenge, let's not try to re-indoctrinate, let's not try to, this is what I'm going to segue into my next section, assimilate. I think we all use that word, assimilate, but I don't know if we know exactly what it means, but we use it a lot, and I want to bring that up. But if we're not going to do any of that, then we are letting Babylon get ready to punish us. And again, I hate to say it, but that's thank you, USCC bishops. Or, thank you, rulers in Rome and Washington. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew they were doing it in the Old Testament times. Nobody knew they were inviting, so to speak, the punishment of God upon themselves by playing with fire, shall we say. And that's what I could see happening. You know, they'll say, well, yes, in our efforts, but it takes, as again, the fullness of our faith is not found just in hospitality or in tolerance as the only virtue. Tolerance as the only virtue is silliness. If you don't believe that there's other right and wrong, good and evil, that can be done. And as far as I'm concerned, any religion, any creedal system that calls for the death of those people who leave that system is evil. Mm-hmm. That's an evil plank, shall we say. Anyways, I want to share with you the bulletin articles that I don't usually read here on the radio, but since it's my words, I think I could get away with it because, you know, you want it to flow just the right way. Well, listen, stay tuned, my friends. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.com. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.com. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's. One church, many cultures. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Married couples, I have good news for you. There are no such things as marriage problems. I am Father Thomas J. Loya with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. There are no marriage problems. There are only problems in knowing and living the Theology of the Body, which answers the question, why are we a man and why are we a woman? When we know this, we come to know our legitimate needs as man or woman, and marriage is all about meeting these legitimate needs. Remaining unaware of these needs is what begins the process of exchanging hurts, leading to strained relationship. A woman's greatest need is to be relationally fulfilled by knowing her husband is emotionally present to her. A man's greatest need is to know that his wife believes in him, that he is more than adequate, and that he has what it takes to be a man. Our legitimate needs as man and woman are revealed in the very language of our gendered bodies. To find out more about the Theology of the Body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
Welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being here. As promised, I want to read this meditation. We've been talking about the problem in the world today and our how do we deal with the terrorism going on? And here in the United States, which is it's reflected in Europe too as well, but here in the United States, we especially have this part of our culture, and the president has mentioned it, a lot of people mention it, that you can't have a litmus test for being American. Or you can't have a religious litmus test. I think people use litmus tests all the time. But that's not said. But what is said is you can't have a religious litmus test. So being that as it may, and since Thanksgiving is coming up next week, how about that? I just have to begin with the thought about Thanksgiving. So put on your thinking caps here, my friends. As we give thanks for the good things in life, no doubt we should give thanks for being given the gift of living in this great, wonderful nation of ours. But with all that's going on these days, I'm going to ask a crazy question. Is being thankful for being an American enough? I'm going to say no. It's a great start, but recent years and recent months are pushing me, and I hope I can push you a little, to see that the greatness of this wonderful nation of ours needs something more if our children's children will be able to celebrate future Thanksgivings in a couple of centuries to come. Here's why I feel compelled to write this article. Hearing all the comments about the issue of allowing immigrants into our precious nation, especially those fleeing Syria, many are taking comfort in applying a very American sentiment. Many express dismay, or perhaps it could be said disgust, at the idea of having some kind of religious litmus test for immigrants. It has been said, that's not the American way. And you know, I have to say, it's hard to disagree with this. For 200 years, our pride, our understanding of religious freedom has been a solid plank in the American platform. America has not, does not, and will not have any kind of religious litmus test for its citizens. So why should we start now? Perhaps the simplest answer is because if a particular religion were to come along that had beliefs, doctrines, and practices that fostered a way of life that ran counter to much of the values and practices that have contributed to our short 200 years existence, that religion would indeed be toxic to the American way. But here's a nasty twist to what I'm saying. Like those who take comfort in the idea of no religious litmus test for immigrants, others take comfort in the idea that immigrants must assimilate into our American culture. The answer is assimilation. End of story. But here's the nasty twist. Assimilation to what? I'm afraid I must point out the elephant in the room, or should I say the elephant in American history? In our...
Oh! There he is.
There he is.
Hello there, Peabody indeed. Here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Well, that would be the last 200 years, Mr. Sherman. Is that what... Their eyes... These guys, and you do a very good imitation of Mr. Peabody.
I try.
I have to say, no, Tony. So anyways, the elephant in the room. In our modern times, one of the key planks of the American culture is the concept of freedom. That means do whatever you please. Many Americans, even Protestant Christian Americans, and shall I say liberal-leaning Catholic Americans, have bought into and have helped propagate this key plank of the American culture. So you see, in the minds of many immigrants, they are assimilating. In their minds, they are assimilating because they are doing and teaching what they want to do and believe. And here we believe in the freedom to do whatever you want and believe whatever you want. And no federal or state government can say otherwise. So you see, they are assimilating. Not the way the Judeo-Christians of this nation would want. So how do I end this somewhat nasty Thanksgiving meditation? I can think of only one way. This Thanksgiving, do all you can to give thanks to not only being born or living in America, but with all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul, give thanks for being born again according to the way of the Lord Jesus. In him is our salvation. Does that make any sense to you, Tony?
Someone.
I can't help but think that there's a problem beneath the problem, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Yes, they need to assimilate, but unfortunately, to what are they assimilating? The American mindset, the American culture has lost its identity. And so, especially because the key most important part of the American identity is freedom, defined as freedom to do whatever you want, think whatever you want, then how can you say they, a radical jihadist moves into town, organizes a terrorist attack? Is he not doing what he wants to do, following his beliefs? He fits perfectly into the modern American soul.
That is a good point.
And so he's not assimilating. He's working with what we're giving him. And that's why we need to take away one of the most crucial parts of our efforts. And this is where I don't mean to be disrespectful or disloyal or disobedient, but this is where our bishops have fallen short and they haven't been able to teach as strongly the ideals of Catholicism. And to say we must defend religious freedom without a caveat, it is not absolute freedom. Religious freedom is not absolute, just like no other freedom is absolute. Every other type of freedom has limitations. Freedom of speech, you know, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You can't lie under oath in a courtroom. You shouldn't lie anywhere, but that's religious freedom has to be put in context of many of the other freedoms. So yes, it is a key concept, and I'll keep fighting for religious freedom. But beware, my friends, if we don't have a sense of a distinction, that there can or should be some kind of litmus test for religions, just in the basic sense, just in the basic sense, without getting into too much minutia, shall we say, the game's over. And those who will... Who completely have a different view of religion will dominate and destroy us. It's a frustrating thing to say, but I have to say it. I don't know. Let me do the second part if I can, because I've been thinking about this theme, and let me see if this pulls it along a little bit farther. This will be my bulletin article for the next Sunday. Can handle that. Since this is the Thanksgiving day, since Thanksgiving weekend and the first Sunday of Advent, I feel compelled to continue a theme on being thankful that I threw at you last week. I asked you to contemplate a nasty part of our American culture, a part that allows many to say that our American way can have no religious litmus test. It is a part of our culture that handcuffs us in the battle of ideas that come with religious faith. And then tied into what that Navy intelligence guy, Mark Fallon, said earlier, I played that clip earlier in the show, that we're fighting an ideological battle. And if that be true, then we have to fight ideas with ideas. And so I'd much rather be in a battle where ideas are thrown around than bullets. they tend not to hurt as much. Hopefully they convert us. And sometimes converting is more painful than dying. At least that's the way we often take things. Furthermore, it leaves, to use a common football analogy, a wide open hole through which even self-destructive beliefs and practices can run through. I tried to point out last week in my article that the call for assimilation to the American way is weakened and ambiguous in the face of the modern American tradition of freedom to do and believe whatever you please. I am annoyed to see that this is the basic explanation of freedom of religion that so many people have. Let us say that a particular religion appeared on the scene that advocated beliefs and practices that are antithetical to the beliefs and practices of the America that has grown mature, powerful, and wealthy over the past 200 years. Without any kind of most basic religious litmus test, such a religion would be free to create a force capable of destroying the very American way that gave it life. There is something devilish about that, isn't there? It reminds one of the image of the devil who eats his own children. Just read the C.S. Lewis Screwtape Letters to see what that means. So I have been troubled by this nasty discovery of mine. Perhaps if you read last week's article, you may share some of my anxiety. I feel as if I had painted myself into a corner. Religious freedom is something we are proud of as Americans. It is as American as apple pie and Thomas Jefferson. Bringing up the fact that a religion may exist that contains beliefs and practices antithetical to our heritage seems to put us in a corner with no way out. In order to protect our nation from self-destruction, it seems we have to destroy a vital part of that American culture, which has served this land so well for so long. It seems we have to destroy religious freedom in order to save freedom in America. I concluded last week's article by appealing to the way of the Lord Jesus. And this works for me, and maybe it works for you, but most likely it will not work for the millions of people who find the appeal to Jesus Christ as tasteless or as unconvincing as those who appeal to crystal balls or alien beings or other holy books. This corner I have painted us into seems to be a trap indeed. But there is an answer. The answer hit me like a thunderbolt. It is not an easy answer, but it is the answer. It has always been the answer to such human dilemmas. The answer clings to the concept that in America there can be no litmus test when it comes to religion, is to demand that there be only one small litmus test applied to all religions with equal vigor. It is a small test that only the fool will fear. The litmus test I demand is simply truth. Setting aside revealed doctrines, if we simply ask, are a religion's claims and narratives true? Is truth of value in this or that religion? Is deception or lying defended or welcomed? There's only one religion I know of whose founder actually claimed to be truth. Can you guess? Happy Thanksgiving.
Nice.
It just hit me. You know, that, wait a minute, we need a litmus test for religion like we need a litmus test for everything. And let's just start with truth. Let's apply the question, is it true? And go from there. And then obviously people will say, well, you can't, what is truth? You can't get there. You can't go there. Mm-hmm. If you can't go there, we have then created moral relativism and we've made it the official position, the official philosophy. And by George, any religion that doesn't want to, that thinks it's true, no matter what, that has an strong and absolute and dying belief that this is true, we'll look to destroy that culture. And to me, in some crazy sense, it's like who's left standing in this battle? Is it gonna, and to me, it's kind of Catholicism versus Islam. Catholicism has a, as wonderful as so many of the Protestant Christian denominations are, they almost all share in a certain kind of moral relativism, or at least doctrinal relativism, because churches can and always do spring off, and anyone's free to start their own religion whenever they encounter problems. Now, it's a time for unifying Christians, of course. We need on the basics. But know this, my friends, that it's one of the things that turned me off to Ted Cruz when I was watching one of the news. Remember, Dr. Carlson was asked, would you accept a Muslim president? And he got into hot water because he qualified. He didn't just say no. He says, mm-hmm. Well, it depends on that Muslim. If his value system contradicts the American value system, then no. That's a good answer. It's a very good answer. It was like saying, hey, wait a minute. Let's look at the Constitution and let's look at Sharia law. There are contradictions. Namely, Sharia law doesn't have a very good and well-developed spirit of religious freedom. Any religion that professes it's okay to kill those who leave your religion, Catholicism, we believe strongly in its truthfulness, but we never have preached to kill the infidel. That's where martyrdom comes. People will say, what about the Crusades?
Yeah, it's always,
always goes to the Crusades. And that's the there. I'd have to say that the Crusades was so much of a holding back of more death, because there's so much killing going on.
And when were the Crusades?
1400s.
When were the recent Crusades?
Okay. Last week.
Should be answered. There
you go. This morning.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the time is so different. Goodness, well, we're kind of coming close to an end, but I have to repeat too that the bishops have to give us the full truth. Pray for our bishops. Pray for our politicians. You know that we need good leaders to come up with some of these answers. But prudence cannot be forgotten. And what's coming, what I've heard recently, it seems to lack prudence. God love you, my friends. Make sure you get to church on Sunday. Visit your Adoration Chapel. Hug all your family. I'm Father Tom Coase. You've been listening to listener supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed.